Good day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. There's a lot going on in the city of Detroit these days. Some headlines are good ones, like the more than $800 million that city government will get to spend under the American Rescue Plan Act. There's also all kinds of development and change in parts of town that we've been waiting a long time to see, not just in downtown and midtown, but lots of neighborhoods are experiencing positive change as well. Still, there are tensions and issues. There's a committee looking into whether the city of Detroit can be part of the movement to provide reparations to African Americans who were cheated for so many years of really basic human rights, of money, all kinds of things. And there's a talk, a little bit of talk, about things like universal basic income. Meanwhile, I think a lot of folks in the city are just waiting and waiting, not with great anticipation, for the inevitable big storms that we will get this summer and what they will do to our streets, to our basements, to our houses. Last summer was a tough one to get through. Against that backdrop, last fall, Detroiters went to the polls and elected a new council, a newer council than we've seen in many years. Lots of seats turned over. One of the people who was elected for the first time in that election is joining us now. Gabriela Santiago Romero is a city council member in her first term, and she serves Detroit's 6th District, which covers much of Southwest Detroit. Her most recent resolution, which asks the mayor to redirect a portion of the ARPA funds to renovate Detroit Land Bank Authority houses and sell them to Detroiters, was passed unanimously by the council. It represents one of many proposals she believes she can offer to improve the outlook for the city and its residents. I'm really pleased to welcome Gabriela Santiago Romero to Detroit Today. It is really great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
So you've been on the council now for about 6 months. Let's talk first about what your agenda looks like for the time that you're there, and I guess just how you're adjusting. It's new for you, and I know there are lots of things that people encounter when they get to the council table that maybe they didn't anticipate.
Sure. So my agenda is large. There are a lot of things that I would like to do, and there's a lot of things that Detroiters need. But we're first trying to tackle housing. This is something that residents are calling in about every single week. It is why I did put forth that resolution. But quite frankly, we have a lot of things that we need to be improving. We need to be improving our transit system so that people are able to be mobile throughout the city and throughout the region. We need to make sure that, to your point, we have a solid infrastructure, that we're investing in our infrastructure because climate change is here. And I believe that, frankly, it will continue to only get worse until it gets better, really our federal leaders and the corporations do something about how we're destroying our climate and our planet. I'm the first queer woman to be elected to city council, so there are a lot of LGBTQ policies that we want to pass. So there's a lot, but quite frankly, I will be very proud of myself if we are able to leave after my tenure addressing our basic needs, because not only do Detroiters love a new restaurant and a new coffee shop, we love when our garbage is picked up on time, when our streetlights work, when there are no sinkholes in our neighborhoods. So there's a lot of issues that we have to address. And as a long-term resident that loves the city, that has seen the city get better, we still have a long way to go.
Yeah. So, as I was saying, you represent Southwest Detroit. The district that you represent covers most of Southwest Detroit and some other parts of the city as well. That part of the city, of course, is I think defined by Latino culture in many ways. It's one of my favorite parts of town because of that. But let's talk about you being the second Latino ever elected to sit at the city council table. It's a great opportunity, but I would also imagine it's a bit of a responsibility that you carry as well. Talk about what you bring from that community and what that community needs from the city council.
Absolutely. I'm very proud to be the second Latina to be elected to city council. I'm the first Mexican immigrant to be on council. Mm-hmm. And as an immigrant, I understand the needs for us to have an ID that allows us to pick up, pharmaceutical medicine that might be needed, that is accepted at a bank, so that you're able to open a bank account. The city of Detroit is in a border state, which means that we have pretty heavy ICE activity throughout. And I know for myself, I actually never left my neighborhood growing up. I never left my block until I was about 18, 19 years old. And it was because of the fear of ICE, especially when I was younger and when we were still undocumented. So I know that there needs to be policies and best practices set in place where undocumented immigrants, where Latinx folks and their families are able to freely move around the city, access our resources and opportunities, and to be a part of the city that we all love and that we all want to be a part of. I mean, as you know, we open businesses, we provide childcare. We are an integral part of our community, and we love that. So I see my role as one that supports people being able to stay and feel cared for. And just want to touch on the fact that unless we do that, they're going to leave. And unfortunately, due to gentrification, due to basic needs not being met, not only, and we all saw the census in the population decline, I believe we're also losing population in Southwest Detroit, and we're losing our Latinx population to the suburbs. There was a most recent article talking about how Lincoln Park is the new Southwest Detroit, and they're not completely wrong. That's where my family lives now. My parents moved. A lot of my family now lives in the suburbs. Mm. And it's because it's so much easier for them to open a business there. Here, there was a recent article that said it's about 75 steps to open a business in Detroit. And when I brought that up to the departments, they said, no, it's not 75, it's about 35, as if that's any better. And quite frankly, I would like us to evaluate our process for opening businesses. I would like to evaluate how difficult or easy it is for folks to be able to be here and to be a part of the city. Because if it's not as easy or welcoming, people will go somewhere else where it is.
Yeah. I want to talk about some of the headline issues that are going on at the city and at the city council. As I said in the open, Detroit has a lot more cash than it normally would because of the $800 million influx of federal money from ARPA. There have been a lot of arguments, of course, about how to spend that money the best way we can. There are some, I think, reasonable restraints that have been exercised on spending it on things that would require long-term investment. Of course, this is a one-time injection of money, so you can't add structural cost with it. But you recently had a specific request for how we should spend it, maybe differently than the administration would like to. The city council recently unanimously advanced a resolution you introduced that recommends the city use ARPA funds to renovate Detroit Land Bank Authority houses and sell them to Detroiters. I want you to talk just a little about what your thinking is there and how much federal funding you think maybe should or could be directed for this proposal.
Yeah, so that resolution comes from a number of ideas that have been floated around. It's not originally mine. I mean, Council Member Calloway has said it herself multiple times. We have land bank homes. Why can't we use those and provide them to Detroiters? We have our Skills for Life program that is hiring Detroiters to train them to be able to have skilled trades. We have the skilled trades. We have a wonderful state-of-the-art skilled trade center right now that is training Detroiters and Michiganders to take these really great jobs. And we have great community development organizations that can provide mortgage or loans to Detroiters if they want to purchase a home. So that resolution is one idea. I think there are many ideas. I don't know the answers, but I have the ideas and I have the team and the energy to find the solutions and to find the answers. We're hoping to spend at least $100 million of our ARPA funding towards housing. I believe right now, at worst, we're spending about 7% of our ARPA money for housing. In a city that needs housing, affordable housing, anywhere from 30 to 50% AMI, to me, it just seems like we have an opportunity to recalibrate some of that money and to think differently, think bold, and really use the ARPA funding for what it is, an opportunity. To put forth big solutions, big ideas. So I'm already coming across some red tape, some politics, some issues, but we also are reaching out to our law department to see whether or not this resolution and these ideas are possible. Because to your points, ARPA funding is there are restrictions, but where our hope is that this is something that is viable, that's something that we can spend ARPA funding on. And if so, its next steps is talking to the departments, talking to partners, trying to make sure that we are capable of having this idea happen, and if not, what can we do? If anything, I hope that this resolution sparks more ideas that we can begin to explore.
Yeah. I'm talking with Detroit City Council member Gabriela Santiago Romero. She represents District 6 here in the city, which is covers much of Southwest Detroit and some of the center of the city as well. We're talking about what's going on in the city, what's going on council, what's going on with the big issues here in Detroit right now. We'd love to hear from you during the conversation as well. What do you think are the most pressing issues facing Detroit? What do you think the city should be doing, for instance, with this $800 million that comes from the ARPA injection from the federal government? How do you believe the city council should be voting, for instance, on things like the tax abatement that's been requested by Dan Gilbert and Bill Bedrock for the building that they are erecting on the Hudson site? Also, do you have questions for Councilwoman Santiago Romero? If you live in Southwest, this is your chance, particularly to talk to the person who represents you on the city council. But if you live anywhere in the city, give us a call and let us know what's on your mind. Let us know what things you think the city council should be focused on right now. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page, put comments there, or go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation. I do want to talk about I want to talk about infrastructure and ARPA and what's going on in your district with flooding and things like that. But before we do that, I do want to get your reaction to this proposal to give $60 million in a tax abatement to Bedrock as they build this new building on the Hudson's site. You've said you're going to vote against it. So I would love to hear what your issues are with that proposal, and is there anything that could change in that proposal that would convince you to vote for it?
Sure. So I I feel the need to vote no on the tax abatements, not because of this tax abatement, not because of Dan Gilbert's, but because of our whole tax system as a whole. I think that we need to revisit it from the top down. In the state of Michigan, we need a graduated income tax where the riches are paying their fair share, which is not currently the case. Detroiters pay very high taxes. We pay very high insurance rates. We are now paying very high gas prices. There are just so many things that Detroiters have to pay that we do pay that, quite frankly, it doesn't feel fair to me to have one of the most richest men of the state not also pay it. And I understand that there is a lot of philanthropy, a lot of good, a lot of giving, a lot of development for the city, jobs, all these things that have been done by him, which I appreciate wholeheartedly. But for me, it's not about a give and a take, especially not when you're taking from a city that doesn't have anything to give. Right now, we need all the resources that we can possibly muster. We need to make sure that not only is our downtown solid, but the rest of our neighborhoods as well. And having something like the DDA, the Downtown Development Authority, capture taxes downtown and keep them downtown is something that I don't agree with, something that I need us to revisit, because if we're going to develop the city, if we're going to develop our downtown, and we are, and it's going to be beautiful and bring in all this money, what about our neighborhoods? What are we doing for our neighborhoods? What are we doing to address those needs? And what are we doing to lower taxes for residents? What are we doing to give them a tax break? I think that we need to revisit, again, the way that the state taxes, because quite frankly, if we had a graduated income tax, it would impact everyone across the state, all working poor, all working class people. If we had a dual tax or a split tax system, one that taxed land more than property, it would lower taxes for residents. For me, I think that this is an opportunity to revisit the whole system and call it out for not working for us. And these tools that are being used are being used to develop a part of the city that I believe has a lot of resources, a lot of tools already. And if we're going to give you this tax abatement, then it needs to address the needs that we have, which is we need affordable housing, mm-hmm. we need affordable storefront space, we need affordable leases. And I think if I was to support a tax abatement, I would need that commitment. And I know that Council President has sent out a statement asking for just that. She's working together with Bedrock to see if we could have some more essentially community benefits for this tax abatements, because we need so much more than what we have now. And it's a little difficult for me to be able to say or to be able to vote for a tax abatement for a billionaire when I know that our city needs so much more, when I know that if we all give the city all that we have, which I do, mm-hmm. I give the city all that I have without asking for anything back, because I know that, quite frankly, by me developing my neighborhoods, developing the city, I benefit from that. I benefit from the streetlights being turned on. I benefit from the businesses that are being open. And I would just hope that we're able to work on this together and really listen to residents and their needs.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's really important that what you said there and where you started there was with the idea that we need a much larger conversation about tax mm-hmm. policy, not just in the city, but in the state. One of the really frustrating dynamics around these discussions is that they end up being arguments over one kind of project or subsidy. They are about the instant issue, right? So now we're fighting about whether Dan Gilbert or Bedrock deserves this $60 million for this particular project, rather than talking about how we structure things like subsidies, how we structure our taxes to make sure that the people who live here actually benefit from the things that happen, that when government spends money to make something happen or make something easier, that the benefit for that goes primarily and directly to the people of the city. And there are so many ways that things are structured so that they don't. The tax subsidy system, I think, is a really great example of it, but it's not the only one. And it seems that we never get to that point of saying, let's sit down and open up all of these things to a discussion about what kind of structure would make the most sense for the most people in the city. And you're not the only person who says that, but we never seem to get to the point where we get enough of our public officials together to think it out in those terms.
For sure. I studied policies and social systems, and in undergrad studied business. So I think if we, I think there is an opportunity to do it right. I think there is a way to create systems, have tools, have policies, have best practices that uplift everyone, that include everyone, that support everybody. I think just to your point, we haven't had enough elected officials, we haven't had enough billionaires be able to come together and say, hey, this issue is structural, it's systemic, and we need to come together and use all of our lobbying power that we know billionaires have to push state legislators mm-hmm. to be able to make those changes.
Yeah. Okay, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Council Member Gabriela Santiago Romero, and we're going to start to hear from you on the phones and on social media. Richard in Detroit, you'll be up first. We've got several social media comments I'll add to the conversation as well. If you want to join, 313-577-1019 is the number here. That's 313-577-1019. Call and tell us what issues you would love to see the City Council focused on here in Detroit. Also, if you just have a question for the council member, she's here to answer them. If you live in her district, which is District 6, much of the southwest side of the city, this is your chance to ask her a question directly. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
WDET is your place for open dialogue.
The music you love.
Real news and in-depth analysis.
And cultural experiences. The sound of Detroit.
101.9 WDET is your public radio station.
You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Our guest right now is Council Member Gabriela Santiago Romero of the Detroit City Council. She is one of the new members of the Detroit City Council, elected last November. She represents District 6, which makes up much of the southwest side of the city. We're talking about the issues that the council is facing, the issues that the city government is facing right now. Also, want to give people a chance just to ask the councilwoman some questions about her tenure on the council, about what council is up to. We were just talking about the upcoming vote, at some point, on the request from Bedrock for a $60 million 10-year property tax abatement on the $400 million it's more than $1 billion, the building that they're building downtown. There is a lot of debate about those kind of subsidies and that subsidy in particular. What do you think about that idea? Should we continue to chase development and growth in the city through these kinds of subsidies, or should we be rethinking that approach and coming up with ways that government money directly benefits the city and the people who live in it? We would love to hear from you on the phones. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook or to Twitter and put comments there. Let's start today with Richard in Detroit. Richard, what's on your mind?
James, good morning.
Hi.
Good show as always. You know, just a couple of points. I think one thing that's missed with these tax abatement conversations is what they typically review as the but-for test. As public policy experts will tell you that if you are going to give the tax break, you should do it if basically the development would not be built mm-hmm. but for the break,
mm-hmm.
right? So in other words, just don't give away free money just because. Well, obviously, as I understand it, the Red Rock owns the property already. It's a premier area in the city's downtown. That property is going to be developed. Now, will it be developed to the extent as the plans are currently or some other scale? I think that's an open question. But as far as it not being developed at all, I just don't think that's a realistic outcome.
Yeah.
The other piece is these tax abatement contracts. You know, the question, Stephen, you hit it right on. What are we getting in exchange for this $6 million a year? These tax abatement contracts need to be beefed up extensively to where the developer, if you're going to get a handout, you're going to have to meet some measurable metrics and outcomes to determine what the communities are getting in return and enforceable. So making sure that if the, you know, if a certain number of jobs aren't provided or certain types of development or, you know, basketball gym can't be used or whatever the thing that is promised isn't actually happening, that there's some enforcement mechanism within the contract itself to allow the city to either claw back or reduce the abatement going forward until the thing is met. I mean, that's the sort of thing that we need to be doing if we're going to keep handing out money.
Yeah. Richard, those are really great points. And especially that question of defining exactly what the city would get in return for those kind of subsidies is really important. I mean, I understand as well as anybody the challenges of developing in Detroit. And look, people don't develop for altruistic reasons. They do it in most cases, so that they can make money. And it's harder to do that in Detroit for many reasons. But these subsidies that come from government really owe the people of the city something specific, I think, when we do it. And too often, I think it's very hard to put our fingers on what we actually get in return for those things. I mean, I don't buy into the idea that the job creation or the overall economic growth is sufficient. It's not that those things don't exist. It's that I don't think that they're worth the foregoing of important revenue. Councilwoman, I wonder what your reaction is to what Richard's talking about here.
Yeah, Richard, I hear you, and I have similar questions and similar thoughts. And Stephen, to your point about the job creation, there's been a lot of research that shows that these abatements rarely ever meet all of the goals that they set forth when it comes to hiring locally and hiring union and meeting those goals are often not met. And to what we get for the abatement or after the abatement, that's a question that we also have. And I know that Member Johnson is asking, we're asking the administration and our law department to double check for us if companies that have received tax abatements in the city of Detroit actually pay the full taxes once the abatement is over. Because that's another fear that we have. What if you just continue to apply for abatement after abatement, apply for a tax break after a tax break, and you never actually pay your full share? That's a question that we haven't gotten answered yet. And that's something that we need to know is if how likely it is that someone will pay the full taxes once the abatement is over.
Yeah, yeah. Richard, again, really appreciate the call and the comments. Let's go next to Mike in Northwest Detroit. Mike, what's on your mind?
Hey, everybody. Really appreciate this conversation. I had a question for Councilmember Santiago Romero about the split rate taxation for properties, for vacant properties. I was wondering what impact, if you guys have talked about how this would affect side lot owners, and especially like since there was a big push to get homeowners that had a side lot that like had been abandoned, neglected, all that kind of stuff, to purchase it for a reduced rate, like $500 or $1,000, and what kind of impact, since there likely will never be a structure built on that property again.
Yeah, it's a great question, Mike, and it's come up a couple times when we've been talking about this proposal for split rate tax, property tax in the city. Councilwoman, first, let's have you explain this whole split rate tax idea to our listeners and whether you support it, but then also address Mike's question about people who own side lots. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of Detroiters who do. I'm one of them as well. And so I think there are a lot of questions about that.
Sure. This is a great question. And in the most simplest form, a split rate tax, as I mentioned, would tax property, or it'll tax vacant lot vacancies, vacant space more than space with properties or with spaces that have development on them. The idea is that you will tax speculators more. We have billionaires that have bought up a lot of property throughout the city that are just standing on the property that have not developed it at all. And we have a lot of residents that still own their home, that pay a lot of taxes, who quite frankly should be paying less. This is something that the city can't do. It has to go through the state. We are preempted from doing so. So it needs to be a fight that the administration, council needs to take to Lansing. But that's a very interesting question about folks that may own side lots. I'm glad that you brought it up, because now it's something that we can have front and center when we're discussing this. But frankly, I think that the biggest impact that you'll see is on the speculators. It's on the speculators that might own 800 parcels of land, as we know that some people do, who could be paying a lot more in taxes, and who, frankly, if we change this tax system, would be encouraged to develop, to let go of that land, to let go of it to a resident that might want to develop, that might want to build a home, might want to build a storefront on that property. So it's a good question. I don't know the exact answer, but it's definitely something that we should be talking about now that you brought it up. Yeah. But I think that it'll support us bringing taxes down for residents, homeowners, and really push speculators to develop on the property that they're holding.
Yeah. Again, Mike, thanks for the call and the really great question. Let's go next to Christopher in District 2. Christopher, what's on your mind?
Hello. What's on my mind, just because of the prior conversation, is how my property at 160 West Golden Gate was taken liberty by DTE and without permission, and cut my tree that was like beyond the property line of the extended alley. Now, the reason why I called is a proposed resolution. And the resolution is taking those subsidy dollars and putting them in trust to create a trust-backed UBI system that gives trust to firms, institutions, and households. Now, the institution that I have in mind right now is in the District 6, where my grandparents' home is, and Reverend Barlow's church, where my grandmother resided like my entire life. And they have $1 million structure there that is sitting incompleted. And it is my dream to actually do this for them, because it is sustainable as well.
Yeah. Christopher, first of all, I ran into Christopher yesterday in District 2, and he came up and introduced himself. He calls pretty frequently here on the program and is consistently talking about UBI as a policy imperative of his. It was really great to put a face to the voice. But I'm glad he called today, too, because this is a great question for you, Councilwoman. What about, again, this bigger picture conversation, if we could have it, might lead us to say, well, instead of putting money into these kind of subsidies, why don't we put money into something that would guarantee Detroiters' income, even if they're not able to get jobs or able to work? It really is frustrating, I think, that we can never get to that point where we can even have that conversation.
I agree. It's frustrating because it's possible. Ann Arbor is using its ARPA money for a universal basic income program. Mm-hmm. Why can't we? The state of California, I know it's California. I know it's very progressive, but they provide their undocumented immigrants a lot of support, a lot of financial resources, and that's because they know that's a large part of their workforce. That's a large part of their community that helps make that state what it is. I think it's frustrating that we are told or we are discouraged from having these conversations, because I believe that all of these things are possible. It just takes leadership that wants to be bold, that wants to take a chance on Detroiters, and see how incredibly impactful this would be for our lives. I am someone that grew up in poverty. I am someone that received resources, and some people might call that a handout, but that allowed me to live my life with dignity. It allowed me to want to fight to serve my community. It allowed me to want to give my neighbors what I received. I would go to a local church, and my mom would pay $10 or $15 to get a box full of food. We weren't able to receive some Christmases toys, so my mom would go to Toys for Tots, and we received boxes full of toys. My mom was able to receive WIC so that my brother could eat. It's those simple social structures and systems and resources that for me are not handouts. They are what people need to help give them a leg up from this hole that we often feel like we are in when we are at our worst. And quite frankly, it often leads to us being able to allow us to get to that next step. It allowed my mom and my family a life of dignity that allowed us to focus on being able to go to school, mm-hmm. on being able to go to work, on putting gas in the car, that allowed my mom to be, working catering and room service at like local hotels. So for me, it's super frustrating to not be able to have these conversations, because I have been positively impacted by those resources, and believe that if we have more, we will only see a positive return.
Okay, Councilwoman Gabriela Santiago Romero, it was really great to have you here with us on Detroit Today. Thanks for joining.
Thank you so much, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
When we come back, we are going to talk with Dr. Antoine Garibaldi, who was the first lay president of the University of Detroit Mercy and is retiring. We're going to talk about why he feels like now is the time to leave and take a look back on his time in the position. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.